Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Some old school hockey marketing ideas coming up on the show, along with a return to our team of the day. The lead question, of course, though, is did you win the Amherst Alumni Golf Tournament yesterday?
No, I did not. We did have a fairly good day. I think we were six under, seven under, 15 was the winner. But you know that course is hard, right? Like
Here we go. It wasn't hard for the leaders, apparently.
It was fun though. It was a great day going back out on the course. I ran to the number one hole, which they were still on the green. And then I was chowing my burger down that I grabbed on the way out as I got there. And they're like, Marty, bring your putter. So I ran up there with my putter and I made the 15 footer right away. Boom, like right in. So it was like, yeah. And then it was fine. We had a good time, but, I got to, you know, say great turnout at the Rochester Americans Alumni Golf Tournament. We had obviously Don Stevens on the show yesterday, and Razor spoke about Scott Metcalf at the little get together after, which was awesome. He told a story about how they were playing somewhere and they had a 5-on-5 fight, and you know, Metter's got a guy in fighting him and Razor's got a guy in fighting him right in front of the visiting bench, the other team's bench. And as Metter is punching the guy out, he's like, Rob, Razor, we need milk and bread when we get home tonight. And he's punching him, giving him his grocery. And he goes, the whole bench was like, these guys are crazy. Like, he's calling him for his grocery order. So that was a great little story that they were talking about. And as I was leaving, this bunch of pigeons, and I'm saying it funny because that's how they got introduced by their leader, is the Flower City Warriors, mm-hmm. that they, the group of veterans that mm-hmm. Form a hockey team in yep. Rochester, and they play against other veterans and whatnot. So the guy's talking about some of the proceeds from the alumni golf tournament goes to help the veterans programs that the Amherst alumni do. They do a family skate, a learn to skate program every Sunday, yep. and they support the Flower City Warriors. And so the guy goes up there and he goes, well, I wanted to like let you guys know this is awesome. We went to a tournament this year in Long Island, where the New York Islanders Warrior team was hosting, and we do this and we do that. And if you want to say hello to my teammates, the guys, they're the bunch of pigeons sitting at that table over there. So the guys at my tables, they're like, is pigeons like a hockey term? Because I'm like, yeah, it's like the bunch of beauties and pigeons and whatever. So I got to talk to them. Me and Razor stopped and talked to them afterwards. It was awesome. So Flower City Warriors, shout out.
Great day in the Flower City and surrounding area, and really nice to be a part of it yesterday. We look forward to it always. 91 on the current Amherst squad is Consta Hellenius.
Yes.
Without looking, doing any further research, who's the greatest 91 ever in NHL history?
Oh, man, the greatest 91. It was funny because the Detroit Red Wings put a hashtag retire91 tweet that they quickly removed just to announce later that Sergei Fedorov is going to get his number 91 jersey retired in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So he is one of them that I think would be at the top of the list. Now, I believe Tyler Seguin is 91, but I wouldn't put him up there as one of the best. I don't know who else would be number 91.
Dude, this is showing your weakness, kind of like left shot, right shot.
Yes, definitely. Numbers are not my strength.
Numbers are not your strength.
No, because I don't write the guy's numbers. I usually write the guy's names. When
you do?
Oh
my gosh, I never write names. So if you ever see me double clutch, it's because I'm having an in-brain panic of like, oh, I can't remember the name attached to that number. But from a short form standpoint, I only ever write numbers. Like it's
Brad
91.
Richards was 91, right? 19 and 91, I think.
Steven Stamkos.
Oh, yeah, Stammer.
But yes, right. Here's the debate. Steven active, year two of his deal with Nashville, recent team of the day. Detroit, not our team of the day, making news because of Sergei Fedorov. But, like, I think most people are going to say Fedorov's the better player than Steven Stamkos, even though Stamkos will go down as one of the great all-time goal scorers, right?
Yes. And they both won cups, and they both have played international hockey, and they both have left their marks.
Yep.
This is a lot tighter than I would want it to be. My leaning right now leans towards Sergei Fedorov. I think there was an element of wow, right? Like Pavel Bure coming in and Sergei Fedorov, the speed, the excitement. But what happens is Sergei Fedorov, to me, was one of the best all-around players that you can find. Like he had an element of checking and defensive side to the game that was two Selkies, yes. So that's why I saw you put two fingers up. I'm like, yeah, I know he won once, but I think he's a multiple Selkie winner. Mm-hmm. And that to me is a big, big factor in saying, look, Steven Stamkos, unbelievable career that keeps going. And the goals, yes, absolutely. But I think that Fedorov with the Selkies just kind of go a little bit further. But man, when Sergei Fedorov, I think he was dating Anna Kournikova.
Yeah.
And Mike Ramsey, I believe, played with Fedorov in Detroit when he was dating Anna Kournikova. And it was like when Kournikova would like sometimes meet him on the road because she had her busy tennis schedule or whatever. Rammer was saying like, if they came down to go to dinner, she was dressed up like it was the Oscars. Like it was something to see. So, but that was a power couple, power Russian couple with Fedorov and Anna Kournikova for sure.
An earlier day Google search suggested that Butch Goring was the first 91. Oh, yeah. And of course he was arguably the acquisition of all time at the trade deadline that, pushed the Islanders en route to, I mean, we had talked about this with our team of the day a while back about, you know, teams trying to get over the hump. And who was it this year? Obviously, it was, Edmonton, but there was somebody else that we were talking about that has been, Dallas, of course.
Dallas, yeah, I was going to say.
And
Dallas.
Like, you go back to the Islanders of the 70s, like four times in 5 years, they were in the conference final before they ever rattled off the four straight cups.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow, that's a lot. That is a lot. And, you know, so number 91, Butch Goring came in from Los Angeles and changed the fate of their franchise. And you mentioned Tyler Seguin, Vladimir Tarasenko, of course, is probably worn number 91. Excellent player, Stanley Cup winner. Can you name the only Sabre to wear 91?
I was going to do a quick search because I was like, who wore it for the Sabres 91? Wouldn't be able to name you the only one.
Greg Cajula for 7 games.
Okay, so I didn't play with him. I was going to say, like,
No, you did not play with him. You analyzed his 7 games.
Yeah, I'm like, if I played with him and I forget the 91, although there was always some weird numbers. Okay, so you mentioned a quick Google search, and I mentioned to you that a couple of days ago or last week, like, did you Google back in the days and... Or did you run to the library to get the yearbook?
Yes.
And because our team of the day is the New Jersey Devils, and a lot of, you know, you talk about the Devils, it's Jack Hughes, and I didn't want to rewatch Jack Hughes getting hurt last night, but I wanted to get a context of that game with the Vegas Golden Knights. So I write down Jack Hughes injury, and then a quick Google AI overview says Hughes collided with Golden Knights defenseman Alex Pietrangelo and fell awkwardly to the ice. I'm like,
No.
Like, we can't trust AI all the time. Like, you got to do your own research, knowing that it was with Jack Eichel that they collided and fell awkwardly into the boards. But that's what happens. Like, I mean, we can Google search, we can ask, you know, ChatGPT or whatever to give us the answers, but you always have to do your homework because they could be wrong.
Do you think, just to put a bow on that 91 discussion after you veered into the Devil's lane, do you think Consta will wear 91 eventually with Buffalo?
Yes. I think it's a good number. I think 91 is a very good number. It's, look, Fedorov was flashy. That's great. Steven Stamkos is a flashy kind of one-timer. He had the blonde hair, the whole tempo look to him. Now moving on to Nashville since last year. But I think Konstantelainas, the 91 looks really good on him. And I know people are going to say it's a number or whatever. I'm not big in numbers, but I liked certain type of numbers and how they fit with the player. Mm-hmm. And I think with Konstantelainas, that fits really well. I was just telling the story yesterday about how at the Amherst golf tournament, we had three people there that have an NHL rules written after them. So you got the robbery rule, which is if you lose your jersey and it goes over the head, it's a game misconduct. You got to tie it down. You have me with the 00, can't wear 00 anymore. It was 1 through 99 and now 1 through 98 mm-hmm. with the Wayne Gretzky 99 being retired all around the league. And the other one was the Legio rule. And we talked about the fair play scandal, him knocking the net off. So there's three people there that have.
Is that an NHL rule, though, because of him? Not really, right?
Like, it is an NHL rule now. So if you. But
now, because of that?
Yeah. So the NHL and.
I would have thought it would have been in place a lot longer ago based on Roger Nilsson probably employing that tactic in the 80s.
No, the rule was it was a penalty shot. And because he did it in the AHL, then they kind of took a look at it, and then he did it again in Germany with Red Bull. The NHL and the IIHF basically said, okay, here's the rule now. If at any point on a rush attempt scoring chance, the goaltender knocks the net off on purpose, it is going to be an awarded goal. So there's a David Legio rule right there.
Cool. Did you guys get a picture together?
No, but we... We were delayed on the 17th hole, maybe. It's a par five.
No, 18 is the par five.
Oh, no, it's on the maybe eighth hole. Mm-hmm. Eight holes, the par five come down the hill, and then you got the ninth hole across the water, I think, with the double bridge. Anyway, and there was like three groups there. So we sat on the hill. He was two groups in front of me. So we sat on the hill and, you know, kind of chatted a little bit. It was kind of funny because his group was awesome. The group before us was great. The group behind us was great. So, you know, when we got held up a couple of times, but we were held up with some great people.
If you, Razor, and Legio had your headshots on a t-shirt, would the caption be rule breakers or rule makers under it?
League minimum.
No, that's Razor exclusive. We know that.
It would be rule makers.
Rule makers.
At the time, they're not rules. We are not breaking any rules.
Right. I like it.
We made the rules, so that's good.
Add it to the list of t-shirts that are going into heavy production. Hey, what's
Razor, do you know how many Razor, I'll give you the over-under, how many shots did Razor hit in the golf tournament yesterday? Over-under a half a shot.
Oh, he had one.
He had none. He drove.
Oh, he didn't have his clubs. Hang on. He didn't putt?
Oh, he may have putt. I said that was the game. He goes, Marty, I didn't even hit one golf ball today. So
this is okay. We may need clarification on this because if he putted, that's hitting one, and that counts as a stroke. And then I bet the over, so I get it. But
so you get it. You probably would win the over, but yeah. So it ended up being a six-hour round, like because we had a 4:30. Like a team meeting, and I putted my last hole. I was driving the cart, and I got on the meeting at 4:30 just in time for that.
Well, here's hoping Konstantelainas rocks 91 heretofore, and that would include a rookie game against the New Jersey Devils on September the 12th. That is the first game of the Prospects Challenge this year for the Sabres, and we're expecting Helenius and, obviously, at least 17 other skaters in the lineup for Buffalo that night against New Jersey, kicking off a weekend that settles right in the midst of Sabres Fan Fest and obviously includes teams beyond what Buffalo will be seeing, which is New Jersey on Friday, Columbus on Saturday, and Pittsburgh on the Monday. And the Monday is always a noon start. It's like getaway day from the Prospects Challenge as everybody departs in good time so they can get back to their respective cities and typically open their main camps with some of those rookies from the Prospects Challenge included in it. So you'll also see prospects from Boston. And who else am I missing? Just Boston, I guess, is the only team
Boston,
that Buffalo
Columbus,
doesn't play.
New Jersey, yeah Pittsburgh.
Boston's the only one that Buffalo doesn't play. In the tournament.
How about this? On Saturday the 13th, I believe that is.
Yes.
Columbus and Buffalo. So Shout out to Eric Bolton, who celebrated his 49th birthday on Friday. No, mm-hmm. not Friday, on Sunday. Was it yep. Sunday the 17th? Sure. And so I went with him. We went over to his favorite place and one of our favorite places back in the days, Falletta's in Clarence, and sat there. And his youngest boy, so Sawyer Bolton, is with the Flyers organization, played junior Sabres. And but Ryder, who plays junior, played with London, won a Memorial Cup, and now is playing in Brantford, is going to be with the Columbus Blue Jackets, the rookie team. So he will play the Sabres on Saturday. So there will be a Bolton running around the ice for Columbus on that Saturday against the Sabres prospect.
Well, whether it's Prospects Challenge or main camp, there's definitely some heaviness to Buffalo's roster when you'll see it on display in mid-September when yes. all of this starts to unfold. And that kind of ties in with our team of the day because, of course, Buffalo dropped the first two to New Jersey last year overseas. And then in their only victory on home ice, it was overshadowed by a massive nascent hit on Thompson. So when I mention old school marketing off the top of the show, Marty, how do you feel about from now moving forward, so September, October, November, for the next 3 months, we refer to the one and only home game featuring the Devils and Sabres this year as Black and Blue Friday, right after Thanksgiving. Let's knock the stuffing out of them.
I love it, Duffer. I love it. And we can take a picture of my arm, who's black and blue right now, and say, if you come out of the game and you don't have bruises on your body, some way, shape, or form, the fans included, the announcers included, Razor has got to take a puck to the face at some point.
Stop taking pucks to the face. Maybe he can just stick his arm out.
I know, exactly. stop it. Bruise your hand or something. But I do agree that I think this is one of those that fans are going to circle and say, look, it started with Brendan Dillon and J.J. Peterka in Europe when the Sabres started the first two games against the Devils over there. Now, you're right. Like, we talked about it off-air beforehand. Alex Tuck went and fought Dillon right there. It was a good response. There was no response when Nason hit Thompson, and that's something that irked Lindy Ruff and the Sabres. Tage Thompson did an interview this summer, and he talked about it, about how he's like, yeah, that wasn't great. You know, you look around, and nobody's doing anything. So, yeah, Black and Blue Friday. I love that marketing aspect of it, and we should start it right now as a
single-game tickets are available at Sabres.com, just so you know.
Absolutely. But I do look at the Devils lineup, and I'm like, okay, so, you know, they got Brendan Dillon on the back end. That's got some toughness to him, and Brendan Dillon reminds me of a Bobby Bugner back in the days, like a guy that will fight, but because he's strong, but he's not known as a fighter per se. But
Bugner racked up the penalty minutes though.
Yeah, because he loved having the boxer's robe with Jim Pizzitelli
and be
part of the wrecking crew.
Big difference between Bugner and Dillon though. You know what that is?
The points?
No.
The wins and fights? Because Bugner went 1-99, I think, in the 100 fights.
No. Unless I'm misremembering, like Roger Clemens years ago, pretty sure that Brendan Dillon leads all active players in most games played without being drafted.
Oh,
he will
really?
Surpass 1,000 games played this year, which is pretty remarkable. And do you know
that's which, remarkable, you're right.
Do you know which Sabres analyst I think of when we talk of Brendan Dillon?
Ooh, Sabres analyst? Like mm-hmm. former?
Like in my era with the team. If one can call such a period of time one's era.
You're thinking like Roby?
Mike Robitaille, when Brendan Dillon was young with the Dallas Stars.
Okay.
He would, like, he loved this player. Could never say enough good things about Brendan Dillon. And I think
that's the kind of player Roby would love. Absolutely.
Right? But Marty, this is 11 years ago.
Yeah.
An undrafted player. And we're talking about this guy who just signed a nice, tidy little 3-year, $4 million a year deal on the heels of a nice extended run. He is what he is with Winnipeg. He is what he is. The Devils knew that, brought him in. And guess what? They were top five defense in the NHL last year. Like, Brendan Dillon was a really good fit for this team, and he's had a very nice career, and I think that's the point I'm trying to drive home.
So the Devils, let's start on defense, right? They 2 years ago, the Devils were giving up 3.43 goals per game, and that was 26th in the NHL. And they shaved almost a full goal per game, 0.8 goals per game, and they went to top five. Yes, they added Jacob Markstrom, but it wasn't Markstrom all season long. Jake Allen had a big part of it, but I feel like their defense, Luke Hughes, Brett Pesce, Siegenthaler, Hamilton, Dillon, and Simon Nemitz, who was...
Kovacevic was a huge part of
last was a big
year.
Part of that, too. Yes,
he starts this year hurt, but he actually bumped Nemitz from making the team last year.
Yes.
Now, with Kovacevic being injured for night one, recovering from a knee injury, there's opportunity for Nemitz, like he did in the playoffs, to take that spot, and then we're going to see again where the chips fall here on the blue line. Is Hamilton there long-term? Is Hughes going to sit here and wait... his deal, Luke Hughes, that is, when all relative websites pertaining to salary cap, but my favorite, Puckpedia, tells you that 2 years from now, the Devils have $62 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. You're telling me Luke Hughes is not looking at that before signing this next contract?
Do you sign a bridge if you're Luke Hughes?
No. Pay.
Like, well, yeah, but they only have $6 million in cap space this year. And I would think that Luke
Hughes... Unless you trade someone.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. And
okay, do the bridge. I mean, sure, do the bridge.
But you mentioned, right, like the Devils have Kovacevic, who may start the season hurt. He's $4 million. So maybe you can use some long-term IR to start the season and say, I got a little bit more wiggle room. But I'm looking at Luke Hughes, and I think... On long term, on a 6 or 7 year deal, he could be an $8 million player, right? So that's what it is. Now, could you sign a 2 years at 5.5 just to say I'm under the salary cap right now, but in 2 years from now, it's going to cost you $10+ million, right? Mm-hmm. That's what Luke Hughes may be thinking right now. But I love their defense. I love their group of defense. I think that Sheldon Keefe, second year as a head coach now, after leaving Toronto and going to New Jersey, has done a great job to build that group. But the big question is more like, what is the identity of the New Jersey Devils? Because right now, if we look at the numbers, they were a good defensive team and had solid goaltending, and it's the way they were built. But I want to say that the identity of the New Jersey Devils is really Jack Hughes. And Jack Hughes in 62 games last year, the team was plus 10 in wins-loss record. And when he missed the last 20 games and the 5 games in the playoffs, they were minus 4. There's a big difference right there.
You won't be surprised to learn that I took those numbers a step further.
Ooh,
so
yes, please. Thank
they
you.
Aren't... necessarily directly related to Hughes' absence. This Devils team was 13 games over 500 after Christmas and a win against Carolina on December 27th. From that point on, with Hughes in the lineup for a bunch of it, they went 18-22-4.
Yeah.
So, yes,
they limped in with 91 points, right? Like 91 was the cutoff. Mm-hmm. Montreal, 8 at 91. Columbus was coming up and trying to catch them. Like they really, it's like for a golf analogy, it's like that ball was on the edge and they walked very slowly to their ball as a bug landed on it and then made it fall into the cup.
Well, you have opened the door for an awful lot more discussion on Jack Hughes, his impact, what the Devils' true identity is, because keep in mind, this is a New Jersey team under Lindy Ruff that was 112 points, then it went to 81, then last year, despite our concerns post-Christmas, they did get up to 91, so they've made the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years after missing the playoffs in 9 of the previous 10.
Yep.
So what exactly are they, especially in year two under Sheldon Keefe? We already mentioned that the Devils and Sabres are going to kick off the Prospects Challenge. That happens on September the 12th. We're looking forward to that entire week, really, when the rookies arrive. They get set for the Prospects Challenge. We'll have fans in the building as part of FanFest, and we want you to be at Hockey Fest. It's the all-ages street hockey tournament in conjunction with FanFest. It takes place September 13th. All skill levels welcome. You can visit sabres.com/hockeyfest to sign up your team today. And of course, when you're there, check out all the scheduling that weekend as it pertains to games in the Prospects Challenge. The following week is when the Sabres main camp will open up. The Devils and Sabres have met just once in playoff history. The Devils are our team of the day. We'll continue that next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Former Sabres birthdays still to come later in the show. Marty, you got any Sabre-related news today?
Yeah, it's just announced that the U.S., Team USA, will be hosting a orientation camp leading up to the Olympics next week, August 26th and 27th in Plymouth, Michigan. And Alex Tuck and Tage Thompson are part of the 25 forwards that will be going to this orientation camp, so that's good. Now, I'm happy for Alex Tuck. I knew Tage Thompson was going to be there. I think this is great for Alex Tuck. Pat Kane will be there as well, a little, Buffalo connection. The Tkachuk's brothers. There's
no Caulfield. Matthew's not going to be there.
Well, they are on the list.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, because they already announced like some players, right? I don't even remember.
Is any of this surprising? Let me just say this. Well, you were surprised about something, weren't you?
I was surprised about one thing because the four goaltenders that have been announced to be taking place in the orientation camp, which, look, it doesn't mean that those are the only four that they can pick from.
Correct.
But you got Connor Hellebuck, you got Jake Ottinger, and you got Jeremy Swayman. Three guys that were part of the Four Nations Faceoff Team USA last year. But the fourth guy that I thought should have been part of the conversation but was injured last year was Thatcher Demko. He is not part of the orientation camp. They are adding Joey Decord, which is interesting because Joey Decord, nobody knew if he was Canadian, American, Swiss. Remember like last year before the Four Nations Faceoff when Canada was looking at their goalies and saying,
yeah,
who do we have? There was a thought of Joey Decord and me being able to play for Team Canada, but he didn't have a passport, so he couldn't do it. So
right. It was Key's phone, wallet, passport, and no one could find Joey's, so we didn't know where to assign him from a nationality.
Somehow the NHL and the NHLPA had maybe not set the rules when it comes to which team or nations you can play for. So then it came that, well, you have to have a passport from that country. Mm-hmm. And Joey Decord technically is American, but he does have, his mom is Canadian, I believe, and he's also got Swiss nationality, so he could have played for anybody, really.
Well, fill me in when we find out how we decide on which nations get to compete in all these things, because I'm still a little miffed at the limit.
Well, Pierre and reasoning behind Belmar four nations is going to be there, so that's all I care about with the French team. So that's
the good. Many nations event coming up in 2026, known as the Olympics. There will undoubtedly be Devils involved. The Devils are the team of the day. The Devils have Sheldon Keefe as their head coach. Yep. Jeremy Colliton was on the bench last year. Sergei Brelin gets adopted by every coaching staff in the history of the Devils heretofore because he's an amazing, lifelong New Jersey Devil. No matter where they need him, Brelin is available. He's an awesome dude. Everybody loved playing with him in their championship years, and he has remained a fixture in the organization on the bench. But Brad Shaw has been added as an assistant this year, and sometimes we talk about, okay, well, what can this assistant coach bring? And especially, you know, you're not talking about inexperience here. Sheldon Keefe knows his way around all of this. But it's not like Shaw is coming in to fix the power play or the penalty kill. The Devils were number three on the power play last year. Mm-hmm. Like less than a percent from number one. They were number two on the penalty kill.
Yeah.
They are absolutely elite right now on special teams. That being said, Shaw coming in, other changes sprinkled through the roster, 91 points last year. Higher or lower for the Devils this year?
I'm going to say higher. I think that team, if staying healthy, is a really good team. You look at, you mentioned Brad Shaw. He was an associate coach with the Philadelphia Flyers and took over after John Tortorella was shown the door last year. But he has been around the National Hockey League as a coach since, you know, he actually was an assistant in 99-2000 with Tampa, stayed around for a long time and has been with teams, and he's got the experience. So he's coming in.
I look at Brad as, like, not that he's that far removed from the game, and he's an analyst now. I look at him as the modern-day Rick Bonus.
Yeah, I see. I look at him as Terry Murray.
Okay.
Remember, like, Terry Murray, more of an assistant, but could come in as a head coach if you have to associate. I had Terry Murray as an assistant coach in Philly. He was here with the Sabres. Like, I think that's the guy. But you're right, Rick Bonus, like a lifer, played.
More games behind a bench than anyone in the history of the game.
Absolutely. So I think Bradshaw is going to be an asset for them. But I look at the Devils roster, if staying healthy. That top line, we talked about Jesper Bratt, right, when the NHL Network did their top wingers, and he was really high on the list. And Jesper Bratt had a fantastic season, 88 points last year.
He's had four of them in a row.
Yeah, he's been very consistent. Jack Hughes, if healthy, he's the number one center. Mm-hmm. Nico Hischier, if healthy, had 35 goals last year as a number two center. So you're like, hey, this with Timo Meier, who's adding a little bit of, you know, muscle and strength. And we mentioned Stefan Nason earlier with some physicality. Then you got Dawson Mercer. You got Cody Glass. I mean, Paul Cotter's there. Connor Brown, they added. I feel like they have a very deep, not just on the defense, but forward group. The top end is productive, but they have a lot of that sand and, you know, sandpaper or whatever, like at the bottom, that definitely can put the Devils back in the 100-point column if everybody stays healthy.
What do you think, Connor Brown, and maybe to a lesser extent, even though he did score 20 last year only to have it all fall off at the end, what do you think Connor Brown and Evgeny Dodonov can actually bring to this group?
Well, that's exactly what I said, the depth, right? Like, if right now, if you look at the projected lineup, I can't see Dodonov breaking in the top six. So he's a bottom
top six. I can't even get him in the top 12.
It's again, yes. I was being very, very generous when I said top six. I think Evgeny Dodonov goes in and is a top 12, but I think he's a fourth line guy. But now if you end up with Paul Cotter and Cody Glass and Evgeny Dodonov on the fourth line, it's like, hey, that's a pretty good fourth line right there.
My jury is still out on Glass, and I've tried to give him as much runway as humanly possible, but I don't know. I'm just not sure how that's going to play out here with the Devils. So
yeah, but I mean, Dawson Mercer, the jury's still out on him as well. Like, what are you, Dawson Mercer? Like, I love the guy. I love the player. I think there's a lot there.
He maxed out 3 years ago, and he hasn't hit it since. So, but he's also...
He was a Prospect Challenge alumnus, right? He was there with the Devils at the Prospect Challenge. We got to see him.
He pushed almost towards 30 goals. So everything was being read as we saw it from the end of his junior career to his launch into pro. But he's been much talked about. Obviously, every team's got some tough contracts as they pertain to, bang for your buck. I think Palat falls into that category now.
Yes.
Although they don't really necessarily... I hate saying it because obviously there were questions for their lack of offense at the end of last year without Hughes. But I think the way they're constructed, they don't need Palat to be like a 20 to 25 goal scorer. I think they actually have some of the best contracts in hockey. Nico Hischier, their captain, has 2 years remaining, including this one, at just over $7 million. In the last 4 years, he's top 50 in NHL scoring. Jesper Bratt has 6 years remaining on his deal. I think it's ridiculously good. I think it's laughable to think of what the talk was when they were trying to sign the deal, whether they were going to move on from Bratt. In the last 4 years, he's 21st in points, tied with Sasha Barkov. He's one assist behind Barkov in that stretch.
Yep.
They have Jack Hughes and Timo Meier. Timo Meier, since 2017-18, top 30 in the NHL in goals. He's not a playmaker. He's not likely to get close to 80
points.
He's
not flashy either, but he gets it done.
He's a goal scorer.
And then potatoes.
And then there's Jack Hughes. He's got 5 years remaining. Again, by comparison to today's market value, incredibly good deal. In the last 4 years, he's 12th in the NHL in points per game. However, and you can imagine the 11 ahead of him, he is 357th in games played over the last 4 years.
Now, it's funny because you mentioned the salary for Jack Hughes. He's making $8 million, and he's making that for a while. Quinn Hughes is $785. It's interesting to me that in 3 years from now, well, Quinn will probably sign again in 3 years from now, and they'll be making most. But Jack will be the less paid Hughes brother. It's going to be Quinn, Luke, and Jack. And Jack will probably be the one that is the best player out of the three. Although Quinn Hughes is, you know, a top three Norris every year. But, yeah, I think it's interesting that Luke and Quinn are going to make way more than Jack's $8 million in 3 years from now.
Can you name, in reverse order, starting with the current man behind the bench, the last five coaches for the New Jersey Devils?
Well, Sheldon Keefe, Travis Green, Lindy Ruff.
Mm-hmm.
Lindy took over from...
An interim.
Alain Nasruddin,
and who preceded him?
Pete DeBoer.
No, oh my
God. Oh, I'm going too far. Okay,
you went
wait.
Too far.
But I got the one. I got the Alain Nasruddin. So because I know Naz, I played against him in junior. So
John Hines.
John Hines.
Yes, but Hines was preceded by, and this is one of my favorite little hockey reference quirks, Hines was preceded by N Bench that went 2019-7 after Pete DeBoer was let go.
Well, you know what that is?
They didn't name anybody. It's just the New Jersey bench.
It was Adam Oates and Scott Stevens that were like the the co-coach after Pete DeBoer was let go. But yes, N Bench. Is it Nicholas? Is it Nathan? Nathan Bench. We'll call him Nathan Bench.
It actually has a link on Hockey Reference. And it just takes you to NJD Bench.
New Jersey Devils bench.
I love that they shortened it to N bench. Anyway.
Hey, let me ask you this. Sheldon Keefe.
Yes, sir.
Toronto Maple Leafs for a bunch of years. Last season, 91 points was his lowest point percentage season ever. Like with the Leafs, he always had better point percentage and better points, you know, year after year after year after year. But this was his biggest challenge, a new team. Mm-hmm. And I think he was fantastic behind the bench. So coming off the playoff lack of success in Toronto, although they got ousted in five games by the Carolina Hurricanes, but two of those games went to double OT and whatnot. Like, I still think Sheldon Keefe did a fantastic job in New Jersey getting them to where they are now.
Well, my curiosity with Keefe and his hopes and, you know, identity that he wants for this team lie in the basic numbers. You mentioned where New Jersey was able to get to last year defensively, which was fifth overall. Mm-hmm. Well, they're 2.68. I mean, 2 years ago when they had 112 points, they were 2.71. So nothing really has changed there. Like, they're capable. The biggest drop-off from that 112-point season under Lindy Ruff is they scored 3.5 goals per game then. They have since gone to 3.2 and now down to 2.9. And to me, that doesn't jive with all of the great upfront players that we just talked about and the potential for more from their blue line.
With a third-ranked power play. They dropped to 2.9 with a third-ranked power play.
Doesn't make sense, right?
Sabres fans, here is the key, right? Again, I look at the Devils, and I'm like, what is the difference if you take the numbers from the Sabres compared to the Devils? Mm-hmm. Is that the Devils got way better. They got top five better in goals against per game, which makes a big difference. They were eighth combined in goals save above expectation. Markstrom was 30th. Allen was 9th. Combined together, they were 8th in the NHL. I know it doesn't make sense, but that's how it goes. Mm-hmm. But that's the difference. So if the Sabres this year were to drop like 0.4 goals per game, right? Mm-hmm. Let's just put it that way. They drop almost a half a goal per game, but they get that much better defensively. There's your hope. There's your hope of where you can go. Because teams that we talked about, Ottawa, Ullmark making saves, Montreal, Montembeau making saves, now New Jersey, Markstrom and Allen making saves. That's what gets you consistent winning or consistent point getting to get to 90 plus points. That's the key. That's the key for the Devils. They dropped in scoring, but they're still a playoff team because their defense got better.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they needed every ounce of their special teams to get them in. And so being top three in both is remarkable. But they, to a lesser extent than the LA Kings, would just like a different first round matchup. They have been ousted by Carolina each of their last two visits to the playoffs and are 1-5 all time against Carolina in the postseason. The Devils and Sabres met for the only time in the postseason in 1994, game six at the Odd. Dave Hannon, the quadruple overtime winner. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, a still depleted Sabres squad went into New Jersey for game seven. They were outshot 46-18. Hasek did everything he could. They lost 2-1. Claude Lemieux had the winner, and the late Dale Hawerchuk had a glorious chance with less than 20 seconds left to tie the game. Oh. It didn't happen. And that's the only time they've ever met. It was the beginnings of an incredible era for both Hasek and Brodeur, you know? And I always think we talk a lot about the fine line of success and a lack thereof. That was game seven, Buffalo, New Jersey. Devils would go on that year to get to game seven against the Rangers and lose in overtime. Yeah. The Rangers win the cup. The Devils win the cup the next year. Their first of three in a dominant era. Everything is that close so often.
Marty Brodeur, the Calder Trophy winner that year, I believe.
The year before that, right?
Yeah. So, yes. Yeah. But, yeah, Marty,
I believe,
Scotty Stevens, Ken Dynico. It was the start of that era that the Devils were dominant. And, you know, so you got them beating the Dallas Stars in 2000 after the Dallas Stars had beaten the Sabres in 99. Mm-hmm. Jason Arnott in overtime on Ed Belfour. But they had already solidified their place in the late 90s hockey with Jacques Lemaire behind the bench. And, you know, before that, it was Pat Burns. And, you know, they were a marquee organization, definitely, in that time.
You were right. 93-94 was Brodeur's rookie year. He got the Calder that season. We're back after this.
With his DNR pads, Duffer.
Sabre birthdays, not related to DNR. Next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy birthday to a pair of former Sabres on this day, including a former captain in Steve Ott. Can you guess his age?
Steve Ott is 47 years old.
See, I would have gone high as well. He's only 43. He's that dude has a lot of miles on 43 years. Holy cow. And I don't mean that from a look standpoint. He looks awesome behind the bench.
But he's been behind the bench for a while, too. So you're thinking, like, exactly. Hey, he's got to be high 40s because he's been behind the bench all these years. Oh, and he played all these years.
But
do I see Taylor Pyatt?
Taylor Pyatt, man. I figured you'd like that. He's 44.
One of the few that have played on all three New York-based NHL teams. Mm-hmm. He was drafted to the Islanders, played there. Then, obviously, the Pekka deal brought in Tim Connelly, Taylor Pyatt. And I played with him with the Rangers as well later. So Pisey was one of the few, along with myself, Jason Daw, Mike Donnelly, Patty LaFontaine. Mm-hmm. So there's the guys that have played on all three New York teams.
Steve Ott's first year with the Sabres was the lockout shortened 12-13, which was 48 games. He finished 45th in Selke voting. There's your stat of the day. We'll see you tomorrow.